This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Community Newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Transocean, owner of the rig responsible for the Gulf oil spill of 2010, will pay the government a settlement of $1.4 billion.
President Obama's passage of the National Defense Authorization Act conflicts with his vow to close the Guantanamo Bay prison.
And news company Al Jazeera buys American channel Current TV, causing it to be promptly dropped by Time Warner.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, January 3rd, 2013. I'm Robert Barncord.
And I'm Jen Chavez.
Police officers in Seattle will be able to choose participants for a diversion program aimed at keeping nonviolent drug offenders out of prison. The Law Enforcement Diversion, or LED, program is described as a radical departure from the practices of lengthy prison sentences and court-ordered drug treatment. The program targets people repeatedly arrested for low-level drug crimes and prostitution. The idea is to move these offenders from the justice system to social workers by offering community-based support services like food, shelter, and job training. The program also addresses more long-term needs like access to health care and legal services. As a collaborative effort between city, county, and area advisory boards from the Skyway and Belltown neighborhoods, private foundations are funding LED for the first 2 years. Organizational funders include the River Styx Foundation and the Social Justice Fund Northwest. It's unclear how the program will be funded beyond the first 2 years. Crafted and introduced in the fall of 2011, the program is modeled after similar diversion policies and practices developed in England.
A Portland man charged with throwing a beer bottle at a police car in November has been released from custody and ordered not to associate with known anarchists. Sergei Tuzansky allegedly threw a flaming bottle at the police car from his bike, causing no damage. He has been in jail for 2 months awaiting a hearing. Tuzansky has received support from the Committee to End Political Repression, which is also supporting three Portland anarchists currently imprisoned without charge in Washington for refusing to testify in front of a grand jury. Activists say the provision requiring Tuzansky not to associate with anarchist groups violates his Fourth Amendment right to freedom of association. In a separate incident late last night, ATMs were smashed and windows broken at a Wells Fargo branch on Northeast MLK Jr. Boulevard. An anonymous email to the Oregonian claimed the action was in solidarity with Portland anarchists being held in federal detention for refusing to cooperate with a grand jury. Although temperatures dipped below freezing for the past several nights in Portland, it has not been cold enough for the city to open emergency warming shelters for the homeless. The city only opens emergency shelters when the temperature is below 25 degrees. Some shelters have added extra beds, including 70 emergency mats at the Women's Shelter in Transition Projects and 75 men's mats at the Portland Rescue Mission. The additional mats still fall short of filling the need, as thousands are still without shelter and having to sleep on the streets of Portland this winter.
A severe stomach flu known as norovirus is currently making the rounds in the Portland area. Doctors at Providence Hospital in Portland say they've seen 75 cases just since Christmas. The virus causes nausea, cramping, diarrhea, and fever. It generally lasts from 1 to 3 days. It's extremely contagious, with just 10 particles of the virus leading to an infection. A person with the virus can remain contagious for up to 10 days. Noroviruses are the most common cause of gastroenteritis in the United States. The Centers for Disease Control estimate that more than 20 million cases each year result in 70,000 hospitalizations and 800 deaths.
The California Dream Act went into effect on Tuesday, opening up new scholarship and financial aid options for undocumented students. According to the California Student Aid Commission, 20,000 students are expected to apply for this assistance. The California Dream Act will help California's undocumented high school graduates who enroll in a California institution of higher learning by funding up to two-thirds of their tuition. Previously, undocumented students did not have access to funding to help pay for any of their higher education because they don't have Social Security numbers. Although the state's new law will help undocumented students, according to attorney Scott Hughes, the legislation does not provide a blank check. Instead, it provides a chance to help children who were brought into this country as undocumented immigrants when they were 15 years old or younger. According to official estimates, fewer than 1% of students in the California State University, University of California, and California Community College systems are undocumented.
The Justice Department and Transocean Limited, owner of the Deepwater Horizon oil rig that exploded in the Gulf of Mexico in 2010, have settled on resulting fines. Transocean will pay a sum of $1.4 billion for their role in the incident that killed 11 workers and spilled millions of gallons of oil onto the shores of three states. The British Petroleum partner has 2 years to pay the fines for civil and criminal penalties. Plans for the money are expected to include the funding of environmental restoration projects as well as spill prevention research and training. This brings the total fines to $5.9 billion, with a third company, Halliburton Incorporated, still in talks to determine what penalties may be levied for their role in the disaster.
Following years of campaigning by local activists, Concord, Massachusetts became the first town in the U.S. to ban the sale of single-serving plastic water bottles. The ban was approved after a local 3-year-long campaign urging residents to return to drinking tap water. Local activists cited water, plastic, and fossil fuel waste as reasons for banning small plastic water bottles. Americans consume and dispose of approximately 50 billion single-serving bottles of water each year, most of which end up in landfills or in the ocean. Although aware of the waste, some local stores are unhappy, complaining that the ban will simply drive consumers to buy the small water bottles just outside of town limits. The crusader behind the small water bottle ban in Concord is 82-year-old Gene Hill. According to the New York Times, Hill became interested in the problem of plastic waste when her grandson told her about the Pacific Garbage Patch, a floating debris field thought to be twice the size of Texas. Mrs. Hill has accomplished what environmentalist groups have not even tried, to get single-serving plastic water bottles banned. An unnamed bottled water manufacturer has threatened to sue sometime early this year.
A new tree sit in Texas has once again halted expansion of the Keystone XL oil pipeline. The pipeline, which would transport oil extracted from the Alberta tar sands down to Texas refineries, faces intense opposition from environmentalists and many locals who argue that the environmental impacts far outweigh the touted benefits. The two activists said the action was in solidarity with the Idle No More movement and all those who value clean air and water. There was no word from Keystone XL as to how they plan to proceed with construction, but in the past, they've called on Texas State Police to dismantle previous tree sit blockades. This new tree blockade comes just 2 weeks after the end of an 85-day tree sit near Winnsboro, Texas. TransCanada rerouted the tar sands pipeline to go around the Winnsboro tree sit, despite having told countless landowners that the route was set in stone and could not be altered to avoid bulldozing their cropland or to go around schools, neighborhoods, or ecologically sensitive areas. This new site is surrounded by both man-made and natural landscapes such as Highway 59, railroad tracks, and Lake Ryan. With these, nearby blockaders have found a location around which the pipe cannot be easily rerouted.
A federation of 67 indigenous groups in Peru is suing the government and oil companies to stop proposed drilling in protected lands. The Interethnic Association for the Development of the Peruvian Rainforest says the proposed expansion of a natural gas field encroaches on land reserved for uncontacted Amazon tribes. The Camisea Gas Project's expansion has already been approved by the Peruvian government. The area where the gas field is due to be expanded is not only the exclusive home to indigenous tribes, but also home to some of the most ecologically fragile and biodiverse ecosystems in the world. Concerning the reserve, a 2003 Supreme Decree stated, quote, "The granting of new rights involving the exploitation of natural resources is prohibited." The Inter-American Development Bank made the decree one of several conditions it set before it loaned Peru the money for the Camisea project. A lawyer for ADCEP said that the lawsuit was necessary because the threat to the physical and cultural survival of the isolated peoples could lead to their massive extermination. When Shell Oil discovered the gas fields in 1984, 60% of one isolated tribe soon died after first contact with outsiders from a series of epidemics.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Free Speech Radio News at 5:30, followed by Tilikum Wahwa at 6. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather will be partly sunny with a high near 44 degrees.
It's 5:11, time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Such energy powers as BP, ExxonMobil, Halliburton, and Koch Industries have gone crackers over fracking. Seeing huge profits from this dreadfully destructive and dangerously dirty method of forcing natural gas out of rock formations deep in the earth, the industry is presently scurrying all over the country, asking landowners to sign contracts, allowing them to drill and frack on farms, parkland, playgrounds, and even people's backyards. But now, in cities and rural areas alike, this unbridled gas rush has become a matter of deeply grave concern. Literally. In the shriveled ethical universe of these fracking profiteers, money trumps everything, and nothing is sacred. Not even graveyards. The eternal resting place of our loved ones. Yes, gas frackers across the country are out to get drilling rights in hundreds of cemeteries, promising maintenance money to caretakers in exchange for letting the corporations sink their explosive siphons down under the dearly departed. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust, and mineral rights to Exxon. How spiritual. Oh, come on, snap the industry's impatient hustlers. The fracking takes place way underground, so it won't disturb the graves. Yeah, but what about the souls? A cemetery is a spiritual sanctuary, a place of respect, serenity, and moral decorum. But a fracking corporation has no soul, and its moral concerns penetrate no deeper than its bottom line. For a measure of just how shallow corporate morality is, note that the frackers even threaten the hallowed ground of some of our veterans' cemeteries. Their ethos is clear. Hey, out of the way. Decorum is one thing, but there's money under those graves. This is Jim Hightower saying they're fracturing our deepest values. To fight this, go to foodandwaterwatch.org.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out. HightowerLowdown.org.
Several human rights groups have condemned the passage of the National Defense Authorization Act, which allows for the continued detention of terrorism suspects without trial. President Obama signed the bill this morning despite promises that he would close the military's indefinite detention facility at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. Omar Farah, a lawyer with the Center for Constitutional Rights, spoke with KBOO today about the need to close the Guantanamo Bay prison camp.
The signing of the NDAA continues very onerous restrictions on the president's ability to close Guantanamo Bay. Now, I wouldn't go so far as to say that it prevents the closure of Guantanamo Bay. In fact, I think it doesn't change at all the president's obligation to carry through on his promise to ultimately close the prison. The NDAA makes it difficult to transfer prisoners from Guantanamo Bay, but it doesn't make it impossible. So the signing is extremely disappointing It's not surprising, though. The president has for a long time, I think, staked out a very self-serving middle ground where he criticizes Guantanamo but doesn't actually use any of the political power of his office to carry through with his promise to close the prison. And I that has in turn muted criticism of his Guantanamo policy, and I hope that it won't be as successful in a second term. I just came back from Guantanamo on Christmas Eve. The situation there is grave, to put it delicately. I met with several prisoners. They're hanging on to their physical and their mental health by a thread. The time for deflecting criticism, I think, onto Congress has long passed for President Obama. The NDAA includes a national security waiver that would permit the permit President Obama to sidestep the very onerous restrictions that he complains about in his signing statement that accompanied the NDAA. He has never used that waiver provision, not once, not even for any of the 86 prisoners that he himself has already approved for transfer. So, the inaction at this point is scandalous, and it's important to keep it in focus that, yes, Congress has put up quite severe obstacles to the president closing Guantanamo Bay. It has not foreclosed closing Guantanamo Bay. It has not prevented the president from carrying through on his promise. And I think that's the important thing to keep in mind as the president enters his second term. He has the power to release the men that I represent, Muhammad al-Hamiri, for example, Tariq Baota, who's been on a hunger strike since February 2007. He's force-fed twice a day. Fahed Ghazi, for example, who was detained at age 17. The president has it in his power to see that these men leave Guantanamo Bay. He has to take it upon himself to do so.
That was Omar Farah with the Center for Constitutional Rights. The group has called on President Obama to close the Guantanamo Bay prison camp in Cuba.
On Friday, KABU reported that the U.S. Senate overwhelmingly passed an extension of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA, which kept intact amendments allowing controversial surveillance programs to continue for 5 years. Over the weekend, President Obama signed the FISA Amendments Act extension into law. Today, I spoke with Samantha Petros of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee for more information on the domestic warrantless surveillance now permitted under FISA and the extension's implications for transparency and privacy rights. Before speaking to the latest development, could you speak a bit on how the FISA Amendments Act originated?
So what FISA is a law that essentially gave the government permission to continue carrying out surveillance programs that were already in existence but were illegal under the National Security Agency. What happened was with 9/11, that was transformed significantly and expanded. And so until 2008, those actions were illegal. So what happened in 2008 was there were amendments added to FISA that then allowed that behavior that was previously illegal, which includes various types of wiretapping and domestic surveillance.
How would you argue that the domestic wiretapping currently allowed under FISA is in violation of the Fourth Amendment?
The government no longer needs, under FISA, a warrant in order to obtain any information that's obtained through FISA. So that includes, the tapping of telephones and any electronic communication. So there's some dispute here. Because it is a secret program, we're limited in what we know as far as who's being watched, who's being spied on, what information they're gathering, and how. But we do have people like Thomas Drake, who is one of sort of the crafters of the original FISA laws, saying that the government is now able to watch everything that you do on the internet and that you are constantly being monitored. Whereas some will say that this only includes certain activity, and as far as phone calls go, that's limited to Americans speaking to foreign individuals. But as we've seen over the years, that's not necessarily true, and the government is hiding behind that veil of secrecy. Now, any federal court that has taken on this issue since its enactment has struck down FISA based on the Fourth Amendment. The problem there is that no appellate court has allowed standing to move forward. Because in order to have standing in a lawsuit, you have to show that it's affected you. But because this program is a secret, you can't prove that it's directly affected you as an individual. So unfortunately, there's no way for the judicial system at this point to check the executive and say, hey, this is a violation of Fourth Amendment rights.
Two senators from our home state, Oregon, Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley, were both critics of the Amendments Act on the Senate floor. Speaking about the transparency of this program under FISA, can you tell us about their proposed amendments?
Senator Wyden and some of his colleagues had put forth various amendments. All of them were struck down, unfortunately. The amendment, there were two prongs, and one was to require a report saying essentially this is how many Americans are being spied on under the NSA's program authorized by FISA. And the other half of that was to require a search warrant for those things. And that's something that Rand Paul also supported.
And what sort of precedent do you think the extension of these amendments to FISA sets for possible future expansion of surveillance programs under FISA?
What's dangerous here is that previously, before 2008, as I said, these activities were illegal. So what we've seen here is Congress go ahead and they've crafted a law that makes these illegal activities allowed. So what's dangerous here moving forward is to say, what other currently illegal activities that we construe to be, you know, unconstitutional, are we then going to see Congress craft laws later authorizing? And we don't really have an answer to that, and that's sort of the dangerous unknown here.
I've been speaking with Samantha Petros of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. Reporting for KBOO News, this is Jen Chavez.
The fiscal cliff bill, passed by Congress on Tuesday, includes billions of dollars in tax breaks for corporations. More than 50 different tax breaks for businesses were included in the bill, totaling about $76 billion. These include a tax exemption on foreign profit for banks, including the nation's largest banking companies, which engaged in alleged illegal and underhanded measures to maximize profit during the housing crisis back in 2008. That exemption is worth over $11 billion in lost revenue. Another tax break included in the bill allows profitable companies to write off capital expenditures, essentially providing a massive tax shelter for large manufacturing companies such as automakers and utilities. The biggest tax break included in the bill is worth over $14 billion, and it allows major multinationals such as pharmaceutical and semiconductor firms to write off research and development costs.
Yesterday, the news company Al Jazeera announced it had bought Current TV, a left-leaning network run by Al Gore. Almost immediately after the announcement, Time Warner dropped the Current TV channel from its list of channel offerings. Al Jazeera English is currently available in certain parts of New York and Washington, D.C. to about 4.5 million American viewers. The company has faced stiff opposition to its previous attempts to bring its channel to a U.S. audience. The cable giant Comcast has refused to carry Al Jazeera, and the national satellite networks Dish and DirecTV also do not include the channel in any of their packages for subscribers in the United States. After purchasing Current TV, Al Jazeera announced a plan to launch Al Jazeera America and expand their number of correspondents in the U.S.
A car bomb killed at least 20 people in Iraq today. The car bomb was detonated in Musayib, a suburb of Baghdad, about 40 miles south of the capital city. All those murdered were killed during a pilgrimage of Shiite Muslims. They were commemorating the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad. There is palpable fear that sectarian violence between Sunni and Shiite Muslims will reintensify following a recent relative calm. And in the latest news from U.S.-occupied Afghanistan, America's head commander in Afghanistan, General John Allen, has submitted three possible plans to the Department of Defense for United States troop presence in the country after the year 2014. The options have called for keeping either 6,000, 10,000, or 20,000 troops in Afghanistan past the stated U.S. withdrawal date. According to officials speaking to the New York Times, the lower troop option would only allow for counterterrorism special ops, while the higher options would allow for expanded training of Afghan security and conventional patrols. They said that President Obama is expected to discuss the options with Afghan President Hamid Karzai next week when he visits the United States.
And now, the latest news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.immc.org, for Thursday, January 3rd, 2012. Israeli soldiers attacked Jenin City in the West Bank and injured three residents, while a report shows that Israeli government approved more settlements in 2012 more than previous years. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Local sources in Jenin, in the northern part of the occupied West Bank, reported that several Palestinians have been injured by Israeli military fire on Thursday morning during clashes that took place after the army invaded the city and surrounded a building, apparently in an attempt to assassinate a Palestinian fighter. Medical sources reported that at least 10 Palestinians were moved to a local hospital, suffering mild injuries, while another Palestinian suffered moderate injuries as dozens of youths hurled stones and empty bottles at invading soldiers. Dozens of Israeli soldiers driving armored jeeps surrounded a residential building before breaking into it and searching several homes. Initial reports indicated that the army assassinated a fighter of Al-Quds Brigade, the arm wing of the Islamic Jihad, but it became clear later on that the fighter managed to escape from the building before the army even reached it. The soldiers sealed the entire area and prevented the residents from entering or leaving it. Earlier on Thursday, the army invaded Beit Umar town, north of the southern West Bank city of Hebron, and kidnapped two residents identified as Nizar Ali Awad, 18, and Rafat Mustafa Awad, 15. It is worth mentioning that Nizar was shot and injured a few days ago by a live round fired by Israeli soldiers and was kidnapped today while still recovering from his injuries. Also on Thursday, several armored Israeli military vehicles and military bulldozers invaded central Gaza Strip and bulldozed large areas of Palestinian lands. Local sources reported that the army also fired rounds of live ammunition during the invasion while military helicopters flew overhead. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Thursday, January 3rd news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hussam Kassis and me, Ghassan Manmoura.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast. We encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories here at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Dana Gifford, Joe Leno, Robin Ryan, and Zoe White. The producer is Jen Chavez. Our engineer is Matthew Olson. The KABU Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. If you'd like to call your elected representatives about any issue you've heard on the news tonight, here are the phone numbers, so get a pen or something to write with. The local number for Senator Ron Wyden is 503-326-7525. The number for Senator Jeff Merkley is 503-326-3386, and Portland Mayor Charlie Hales can be reached at 503-823-4120. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. K264AA Corvallis 100.7 FM and K220HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Robert Barncord.
And I'm Jen Chavez. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on Positively Revolting Talk Radio, host Ani Haynes interviews Sarah Van Gelder, co-founder and editor of Yes Magazine, about hopeful trends to build on in 2012 and about deeper shifts changing our culture and our world. At 9, APA Compass presents selections from the show's best segments of 2012. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, hear Flashpoints Investigative News Radio with guest host Kevin Pina. At 11, on It Takes a Village, host Shahid Hamid speaks with local teacher, arts advocate, and coach Michael Chappie Grice about the upcoming celebration of the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And at 11:30, Carlos Chavez presents Community Artistry and Struggle, an interview with Father Amdi Hamilton, one of the founders of West Coast Rap, about the Watts Prophets, the hidden history of South Los Angeles, his life work as a poet and community activist, and his most recent CD project titled Energy. Thanks, listeners, and thanks, KBOO members, for your support. If you'd like to be one of the first to support us in 2013, please go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today. And stay tuned now for more national and international news from the Worker-Run Collective at Free Speech Radio News. Good night, Robert.
Good night, Jen.
Good night, Matthew.
Good night.
This is Free Speech Radio News for Thursday, January 3rd, 2013. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up, as Hurricane Sandy survivors wait for Congress to approve more aid, we'll look at rising health concerns for residents and cleanup workers in affected areas. On Capitol Hill, new lawmakers are sworn in to the 113th Congress. We'll speak with an outspoken Congress member who's leaving after decades in Washington. And California's cap and trade program goes into effect, but will it accomplish its goals of reducing emissions? Some local community groups aren't so sure.